Welcome to session 4 of E281, the PDH online audio version of Practical Plant Energy Reduction. We are here to talk about the generic plant energy balance. Now, that's a fairly complicated, even sophisticated term. What's going on? We're trying to draw a picture of the plant, as some say, from 40,000 feet, kind of looking at what's going into it and looking at what's coming out of it without looking too much at what's inside. Now, part of the concept is we do want to be able to look at what's inside later, but we start from a global view and then kind of narrow in or drill down, as the term is used in the course. The concept of the electronic spreadsheet is to start with a summary report and then do the work to fill in the line items. Use this concept for your plant energy balance. Start with a generic diagram. What does every plant look like? What does every plant have in terms of utility? What does every plant have in terms of waste streams? Make the significant energy streams large and pursue the values. Make the insignificant energy streams small and verify and record the tiny or zero values. And that really means at a later date. Right now, we're interested in utilities coming into the plant and a little bit of the waste streams being discharged from the plant. The term energy balance is used because this is a rigorous technique basic to chemical process. The process engineer does the calculation, which identifies how much energy is absorbed or released by the chemical reaction. Then he sizes his supply, discharge, heating, and cooling piping to match. In this course, we're not expecting to get input MMBTU and exactly match the endothermic value plus the discharge. We must, however, be cognizant that the equation exists. Now, what I'm saying is there really is a plant energy balance. You really can count all the energy going in, and it must balance all the energy going out. We're not going to do that. We're using the concept to identify all the energy going in and look at the places it's coming out for chances to improve the way the plant is working. This is followed by a graphic of the generic plant energy balance. Now, once again, the idea here is every plant has these things. Well, now that's a little bit of play in a game. They have them in a zero value in some cases, but they are worth looking at in every plant. On the supply side, there's electricity, natural gas, water, sunlight, and raw materials. If that sounds a little bit strange, we'll pursue that in the discussion of this diagram later. Electricity, natural gas certainly makes sense. I think you can stretch to water without too much trouble. Whether sunlight and raw material matter or not, we will discuss. On the discharge side of the plant, there's tower flume, radiated heat, exhaust air, flue gas, cooling water, wastewater, solid waste, and product. Now, do these things make sense, and do they sound like they're things worth looking at? Well, I'm trying to convince you that yes, they do, because each of these places where we are discharging something way above ambient temperature, that's wasted heat that can be recaptured for use. It hasn't been recaptured in the past because it costs money to recapture it. But if we're working from a mandate to reduce energy consumption, suddenly we've got money to spend to recapture this energy. Along the top of this diagram, we've got some, well, let's call them ancillary topics that must be discussed. They're put on the energy balance, even though they probably don't belong on the energy balance, because this is the drawing we're working from, and we want to put the essential components on it, even though they aren't necessarily part of this. Maintenance labor, maintenance materials, capital projects, and turnaround projects are also going into the plant. Now, some things inside the plant that are bubbled, they're not detailed, but they're bubbled. The electricity has internal distribution, which in turn is connected to production, process, and overheads. Natural gas has internal distribution and is attached to production, process, and overheads. Water has internal distribution and production, process, and overheads. And there are also some intermediate linkages shown inside here. Electricity has a bubble coming off of it called lighting. And we're going to start from that and end with that. If you're going to reduce energy, you're going to reduce lighting. and no weasel words on this, not reduce some aspect of lighting. We're going to cut out fixtures. We're going to cut out watts. Most specifically, we will cut watts. And we're going to say again and again in this course, plan on cutting 30 to 90% of the watts in lighting, because that's where you get energy savings without affecting production. The electricity is connected internally to motors, and we're identifying motors specifically because they're something we can get a handle on. One of the knobs we can turn, as we were discussing very early in the course. What can you do? You can put in a more efficient motor. Now, we have to look at them to decide that. That's not a blanket generic solution, but it's something that is worth looking at with a payback. Finally, the motors are connected to air compressors and distribution. Air compressors and distribution are tremendous losses in a plant, and everybody knows this. They're just not willing to spend the money to work on it. Well, we're saying our objective is to reduce energy losses, and we will spend the money to work on it. Now, looking again at the generic plant energy balance diagram, natural gas comes in, water comes in, and they're connected by an internal balloon that's called steam plant and distribution. This is also connected to the production process and overheads. The reason for this is exactly the same as compressed air. There are tremendous losses in the steam plant and steam distribution and condensate return. We're going to look at those. They're low-hanging fruit. They're easy places to achieve energy loss reduction and energy usage reduction. We could talk about cooling water, and there's a lot of discussion in here about cooling water, but some processes don't use cooling water. Well, if you don't have cooling water, you're not going to invest a lot of time in it. And in fact, the concepts of steam are more rigorous than cooling water, but they're exactly the same. The reason is steam is way above ambient. You know, if you think ambient is like 70 degrees F, steam is like 400 or 600 degrees F. There is a tremendous delta T out there, and that means that any small leak will be a lot of energy leak. Now, chilled water typically runs at 55 F. Well, if you're running your plant at 70 degrees, and that may be optimistic, but it's a number to talk about. If 70 is ambient and you're running at 55, that means you've got 50 from 70 is 20. I wish my head worked better. 5 from 7 is 2, so it sounds like this is 15 degrees delta T, and there isn't as much opportunity to, you know, Kelvin's law. I'm not going to tell you what Kelvin's law is. You look up Kelvin's law. The more temperature you've got, the more heat is lost. So if you've got 300 degrees delta T, you're losing a heck of a lot more energy than if you've got a 15 degree delta T. But the concepts apply the same way. And lost heat is lost heat. It has to be made up by the incoming electricity or natural gas. So we will chase after those losses. Oh, also on this diagram, I put a little box in a corner called values. And now, is this meaningful? Well, in my mind, it's meaningful. And it may be meaningful in your mind. And it may or may not deserve implementation on your drawing. When I was doing this, I was thinking of making up a web page, you know, a hypertext with links and all that. And you can click that, and instead of electricity, it says electricity on the top and dollars coming into the plant. And instead of natural gas, you click values and it says the dollars coming into the plant. And we could do that for water, and we could do it for raw materials, and we could do it for product going out, and we could actually put a dollar value on the wastewater and the waste heat and the flue gas losses. Now, if this is interesting to you, you please pursue this on your own as a take-home project. It's an idea that's included here for your examination. Now, back in engineering school so many years ago, they said when you do something like this, you follow it with a narrative for each of the items that is displayed. When you say tower flume, you tell somebody someplace what you mean when you say tower flume. So we did that. We said electricity, the sum of all electric utility service points. A drill-down supplemental screen shows each service point, utility metering, check metering, first-level distribution, and names of the departments used. Now, what's going on here? This is laying groundwork for future stages of the project. We're actually going to implement generic solutions right now. But after the generic solutions have been implemented, you still need to reduce energy. What are you going to do? You're going to go into the departments, see who's using the large amounts of energy, and see what you can do to reduce the energy in those departments. So that's what the text is saying in this point. When it talks about a drill-down supplemental screen, that's a concept we're carrying forward. If you're going to do the humdinger full-fledged project on this thing, you don't just do the incoming and outgoing. You do the internals. How do you go from the external to the internal? Well, there's got to be a step in one way, and we're suggesting use hypertext to link from electricity to electricity, electricity global to electricity specific, and maybe electricity in the boiler plant, electricity in production area 1, production area 2 in the office area. And you can look at how much dollars and electricity is being used in these areas to help you strategize on where you're going to invest your efforts. The places with the usage is the places with the savings. One of those little boxy things. Drill down supplemental screen. The recommended form of the working copy of the project manual is a hypertext document similar to internet web pages. At the top level, the plant energy balance is somewhat similar to the generic diagram just presented. Numeric values can be toggled on or off by mousing over the values label and clicking. Monthly or annual amounts and costs can be turned on by the user of the document. The overall plant energy balance diagram is supplemented by individual pages or screens for each area of interest. Necessarily, there will be extensive information on electricity and natural gas. The electric supplemental page will have available lower level pages giving individual substation and feeder trend data shown with associated departmental production data. Now, there's a lot of meat in that for the next stage of the project after you've grabbed the low-hanging fruit. There was a comment here which went by pretty fast and may not have actually spoken to you. The recommended form of the working copy of the project manual. Well, what is the project manual? Project manual is a word that architects use when they're building a school, or they're building an office building, or they're building a museum. They have a book that they call the project manual that is actually everything documented on the project. It shows the code review. It shows the design basis. It's just everything you need to know. It has the drafting standards in it. Has the scope electrical, has the preliminary design, and it gets the specifications before you're done. Well, project manual is a very specific term in a different world, and I think it has an application here that it can provide value if we put the idea out that we are archiving all of our data in an accessible form. It's not, this is the summary, and if you ask me, I can get stuff out of the archives. The summary is directly linked to the archives, and somebody who has a CD that has the summary on it can double-click on something on the summary and pull up the background data. So if you want to bring in a consultant on it, you can give him everything you know on a single CD. Now, do you want to bring in a consultant? Well, again, that's something that comes up later. We're going to get the recommendation that a lot of these things you just can't do in-house. Let me throw it out right now. Capturing waste heat in the flue gas stream. Flue gas is nasty stuff. You don't want to mess with that. Now, I'm sure there are people out there who have a lot of skill and experience, and they like messing with it. That's the kind of person you want to hire to work for you on this. The rest of us, stay away from that as much as you can. What do I know about flue gas? I know about crawling around on the catwalk and slapping stuff we called bear shit into the holes so that it didn't blow into the plant. The stuff is, well, again, we were doing coal plants, so it's a little worse than other places, but it's very abrasive. It contains acid and near acid materials, toxics from the unanticipated content of the coal. I mean, flue gas is bad stuff, but it's got waste heat in it that is worth recovering. And it takes special skills to spend a couple hundred thousand dollars, maybe a couple million dollars to recover that heat. But it's there, and it's there for the taking. And you've got to introduce somebody to your project. Well, yeah, you can give them selected bits and pieces of your project, or you can give them the whole project. Let them see what's going on. You know, sign a secrecy agreement if you're you're scared about this stuff. But that's the idea of this drill down supplemental screens and the hypertext organization. Moving from the plant summary to the first level supplemental to the lower level supplements is called drilling down. This is a feature available in website design, in Microsoft Word, and in SCADA screen builders. The SCADA screen builder is recommended because the screens can go live at a later date and show real time as well as archived data. What is SCADA? Supervisory Control and Data Acquisition. It is a very specialized type of software that's been developed for at least 20 years, maybe 30 or 40 years, and it's become very, very sophisticated. What that means is, what are you going to do with your data that's 5 years old and 10 years old? Well, if you buy a SCADA HMI package, Human Machine Interface package, it has an archive historian built into it. And all you do is collect your data. It takes care of the indexing and recording and storing it and bringing it back when you need it and doing a little graphing. Just anything you can imagine, it can do, because people have asked for these questions before and it's built into the product. Yeah, you spend $5,000 or $10,000 for it. That's not big bucks when we're talking $100,000, million-dollar capital projects. And if it saves you time in tracking the project, it improves the quality of communications to the people who are funding it, it's money well spent. If hyperlinking and drill down are foreign terms to you, you might want to talk to some new hire engineers and look at the Microsoft Word Help section on hyperlink field codes. You select a word on the source page and define a jump to a selected word on the destination page. Typically, the word on the destination page is changed to hidden text to make this look magical. It is very straightforward, fairly easy to do within Microsoft Word. People who are smart on hypertext will tell you it's very simple and easy to do in that also. People who have used a SCADA screen builder will tell you it's very easy, straightforward to do in that. There's something attractive about Microsoft Word because almost everybody knows how to use Microsoft Word, and you're used to the idea of clicking on stuff and jumping to a destination. I think Microsoft Word gives you a back opportunity also, so you can return, or you can put in a new jump at the bottom, back, you know, or give a list of possible destinations. Again, these are all functions you see on the internet every day, and internet programmers, or people who've read the $10 book from Borders, can do internet linkage, hypertext linkage, what's the other, HTML linkage, XML linkage, between different screens and the high-level screens, the graphic we were talking about. Now we're going into another box, and you might say, this is fragmented presentation. We were talking about drill down, and all of a sudden we're talking about measuring electricity. Well, that's the way my mind works. I am very fragmented. There is a box thing here on installation of a 600-amp electrical survey meter. And what we've got is a box, which is labeled circuit breaker, so you know that's a circuit breaker. It has phase A, B, and C lugs on the bottom. Those are the outgoing wires to the motor or the heater or the next distribution panel, whatever is hooked up to this circuit breaker. And we've got a guy with a clamp-on current logger. I know it's a clamp-on current logger because it says clamp-on current logger. And it's got one button that says start and stop. And it's got these jaws. And you push the side of it, and the jaw opens. You release the side of it, the jaw closes. And the picture shows opening the jaws, putting it on one of the phases, and closing the jaws, then pushing the start button. And the label for this graphic is installation of electric current logger 600 amp maximum, where kWh equals volts line to line times current line times the square root of 3 times 0.8 times hours, where 0.8 is the approximate power factor. And in big, bold, underlined letters, it says follow NITA and OSHA guidelines and meter manufacturers' instructions for installation. Now, what are we putting this in here for? What does it have to do with this course? When we are looking for where the electricity is being used, the way you do it is you open a box and put a current logger on it and come back a week later and take it off and upload the data from the current logger into your computer, and you can see what happened for 1 week's time on that wire. It doesn't tell you anything other than that, but it tells you what happened on that wire. And if you talk to people in the department, maybe walk through each day, you can see what they're doing those days. And then you can relate in words with the numbers of the amps used. And the amps are the measure of electricity. That's what we're saying. kWh is energy, which is what you pay for. Well, you get the energy by molding the volts times the amps times the square root of 3 times 0.8. And that's kWh, and then we figured out earlier what that is in dollars. But you need the amps. That's the variable. Your plant volts should be pretty constant. Square root of 3 better remain constant. 0.8 power factor is a magic number, but it works fine. Again, it's not a 5% accuracy kind of thing. It's a good ballpark number to get you started. And when you look at these trends, you're going to see they go up and down. Well, what's the number for that? Well, you look at that. During production, it's such and such a number, maybe 150 amps. During shift change, drops down to 10 amps. On weekends, when there's no operation, it drops down to 10 amps. What's that 10 amps you're interested in? Where is the 10 amps going when we're not making any product? And 10 amps at 480 volts three phase is a lot of electricity. It's a non-trivial amount. Now, you might ask yourself, if you're a person of academic persuasion, why are we looking at phase A? Why don't we look at phase B or phase C? Well, the reason behind this is, in an electrical plant electrical system, phase A better be the same as phase B and better be the same as phase C. Because if they are badly unbalanced, you got big problems. Electric motors are very sensitive to phase voltages. Now, I'm talking way beyond energy reduction, but this is the reasoning for what's going on. And you want to feel confident you know what's going on. Let me give you two examples. NEMA says 2% voltage differences between phases is the limit. You must not have more than 2% voltage difference. I ran an experiment one time. I was teaching a course for technicians. I wanted to show them what happens when you unbalance the voltage. I was unable to do that. As soon as I touched the control to change the voltage, the motor tripped out. Motors are very sensitive to voltage changes. Going up and down together, no problem. One phase goes up, bad, bad, bad. Now, why do I say that means your amps are the same? Well, the secret of electrical engineering, and if you're not an electrical engineer, you might want to write this down. When you got amps, you got voltage drop. If you got more amps, you got more voltage drop. So out of three phases, if one of those has more amps, it has more voltage drop. So we start at 480 volts on one end, and we get 475, and we get 475, but we only get 470 on the phase with the more voltage drop. Well, that's what I'm saying. They will only take a very small voltage difference before they get real unhappy. I'm going to come back and do the next drawing because for some reason the machine is flashing at me. It says it's working fine, but it's flashing at me. And by the counter, it's time to go get a glass of water. So let's take a break now and come back and talk about the same thing with more than 600 amps. If you've got plant experience, you know, 600 amp corresponds to a machine, maybe a lighting panel, but it doesn't correspond to a compressor. Compressors get into the 1,000 amps, 2,000 amps kind of thing. Chillers get into the very well high voltage and high amps. So we'll come back and we'll talk about higher currents in the next session.